Good evening and welcome to the Astoria City Council work session of April 4th, 2016. Ms. Tucker, roll call.
Councilor Nebula?
Here.
Councilor Richard?
Here.
Councilor Moore?
Here.
Councilor Price?
Here.
Mayor LaMaine?
Here. Thank you. We're here for the, initially, for the Parks Master Plan Project Update. Ian, you're doing that, or Angela? Who's, Ian? Okay. You're on.
Thank you, Mayor. Do I need to state my name and address?
Sure.
Okay. Ian Sisson, 1263 Commercial Street, Astoria. So I am here to give you an update on the Parks Master Plan and also to announce, or remind you rather, of our upcoming community input sessions, the first of which will be on Wednesday at Fort George Level Showroom from 5 to 7 with a presentation at 7:30. The second will be at Street 14 on Thursday from 7 to 10 a.m. The third will be on Saturday during Art Walk at Old Town Framing from 5 to 8 p.m.
Ian, I'm going to interrupt you briefly. The one at the Level Showroom, you said 5 to 7, but the presentation at 7:30. Did you mean that?
I didn't mean that, if that's okay. What I said. The presentation will be at 5:30.
All right, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so I wanted to take a step back and talk a little bit about the project and the objectives of the project and how we've been going about creating the draft master plan, which is the stage where we are right now. So again, to sort of restate the objectives of the project, we wanted to work with the community to identify as a department, as a Parks and Recreation Department, where are we now, where do we want to be, and how can we get there? And to do that, we wanted to involve the community as much as possible. We wanted to take stock of what we have currently and analyze what state that is in. We wanted to look at issues and community needs. And then what we wanted to come up with were specific recommendations that include action items, priorities, and costs. So then we established a timeline for the project and broke it into four sections: collecting information, developing a plan, refining that plan, and putting it through the adoption process. So in the fall, we started collecting information through public workshops, a community survey, and doing the collection of the inventory and the existing conditions. In the winter, we went through and we did a level of service analysis. We had more targeted community feedback through focus groups, and then we looked at a needs assessment by kind of filtering all of the input and research that was done through national trends, statewide standards, and looking at peer communities. And what we came up with was a set of initial recommendations. So now we're here in the spring, and we want to refine those recommendations. We want to make sure that what we heard from the community is accurate, that we've captured what they want us to hear. And so we'll be going back to the community with more public workshops and refining these recommendations again. And once we have a set of recommendations that the community is happy with, we'll start developing an implementation strategy around that and then putting it through, again, the adoption process in the summer. This is a more detailed look at that planning process and starts to speak to how the plan is going to be organized, the components of the plan, and the role of the community and different boards and commissions that are overseeing the process. So from the beginning, the mayor appointed a citizen advisory committee for the project. I've been meeting with them monthly to go over different benchmarks in the planning process, and they are vetting the recommendations that are coming out of that plan. Parks Advisory Board, I've been giving progress updates to monthly. Planning Commission, I've given one project update to, and we'll be meeting again later this month. And this is my third update, I believe, to the City Council. And so you'll see in blue there, the blue gradient is the progression of the planning process. So we started with analysis, with the inventory, existing conditions, level of service assessment, And we had an input session, or two input sessions rather, as well as the community survey, asking what does the community have to say. And then we moved on to research of peer communities, state and national trends, and started developing the plan, which consisted of the needs assessment and recommendations. And you'll see another community input here, and that is what's coming up this week, and we want to confirm, have we heard you? And then we'll move into further planning, and that'll be prioritizing projects, assigning costs to projects, and developing an implementation strategy. So is it a short-term priority, a mid-term priority, or a long-term priority? And then the end result will be the master plan, and the process of adopting that plan is what you see at the end in the bottom right corner. The Citizen Advisory Committee will recommend the plan to the Parks Advisory Board, who will then pass it along to the Planning Commission, who will recommend it to City Council, and it will be presented to you for adoption. Are there any questions before I move on to what we've heard about the planning process?
How much input did you get from the survey? How many responses?
Input? So on this slide, I have a it was a great transition. Well-designed presentation. So we had over 900 folks respond to the online survey. In addition to that, we heard from 96 who attended our community input sessions in November, and some other feedback that we got through the Parks and Recreation field trip back in December. We had a Beers to Your Health discussion and focus groups. We had over 100 involved in focus groups. So although there is some overlap between these individuals, about 1,200 people have provided input so far in this process. Quickly to go through some of what we've heard, some of the main themes. Citizens of Astoria have said that parks and recreation facilities are extremely important to their quality of life. And they've said that they are mostly or somewhat satisfied with current offerings. Now, I've highlighted a few major themes that have come out of sort of the anecdotal open-ended responses. And so the first one I want to touch on is prioritizing maintenance and our core amenities. So I'll read through some of these are, well, these are all comments that have come from the survey, and they represent dozens of other comments similar to them. So the first is we need to maintain what we have. We seem to struggle with that. If we can't afford to maintain what we have, we should not add anything new. I think we need to only have a couple of very well-maintained family playgrounds and parks versus too many that are under-maintained. Concentrating your efforts by reducing the amount of parks, amount of maintenance responsibility, and overall liability will create a more manageable park system and improve the quality of the parks in Astoria. We need areas that visitors see maintained adequately. With this town being a major tourist destination, I think it's important to maintain beautiful parks and public areas to show that we care a great deal of our parks and scenic areas. We also heard a lot about trails. Maintaining what we have should be the first priority. If we can afford more, then we can add more. Urban trail systems, emphasis on systems, are the key for future development, especially with the increasing popularity of long distance hiking and walking. A green space or trail system is great for locals and tourists. I love the trails that are available, but they are difficult to find and decipher due to little signage on site, online, etc. It would be nice to have an improved feeling of safety along the Riverwalk. I'm hesitant to go on it alone due to some of the brushy areas and some of the clientele who hang out in the area. And add more lighting along the Riverwalk to improve safety. So the highlights for trails were connecting the existing trail system, improving signage and wayfinding and information, and improving safety. Indoor recreation is another topic we heard quite a bit about. Take into consideration that the survey was open during the winter, so folks were especially wet during that time. We can't stress enough the importance of an indoor facility for basketball, racquetball, rock climbing, and indoor track. We need it in the winter when it's cold and wet. extend the hours at the Aquatic Center later into the evening. Need to consolidate the various locations. Fewer locations, better service. My two major priorities would be to combine the facilities to provide a full family community center and to have access to basketball, racquetball courts for open gym times. So one of the project ideas that came out of the November input sessions was to combine recreation facilities to consolidate at a single central site. So the idea being at the Aquatic Center site, you could add the amenities that are currently at the Astoria Recreation Center, potentially add a gymnasium space, consolidating all into one site. So we had a lot of folks commenting on that idea. Public restrooms was a very popular topic for the comments. We heard a lot that the Fred Lindstrom Park desperately needs a bathroom. More restrooms are extremely important to the tourist trade as well as to pedestrians around town. The Riverwalk is and forever will be the number one people magnet that Astoria has. Permanent restrooms should be there. Poor upkeep of public restrooms. It is important to make sure that the public restrooms feel clean and safe. Contract out cleaning of restrooms and trash pickup around the city to ensure proper care of parks. Parks and Recreation should not be responsible for restroom patrol. So when we heard from people who had something to say about public restrooms, one thing I thought was interesting was there were a lot of folks who said, these are extremely important, you need to provide more of them, you need to maintain them to a higher level. And then there was a group who said, we want to have them, but it's not a park's responsibility. So two different perspectives on those. The last one here, is to control costs and focus on core services. So before I read through these, I do want to say that the average income of survey respondents is higher than the average income for the city of Astoria. So generally, people who took the survey are wealthier than the average Astorian. And we heard a lot about the cost of our services being far too high. We heard people saying, find revenue other than taxes to support programs. Increase fees for non-residents. Residents of Astoria are subsidizing non-residents, which has a negative impact on the department. The fees are just too high. I'd use the pool and ARC more often if they were more affordable. The city is well advised to take stock of all the properties it maintains and services it provides and decide which ones are most heavily used and at what cost, and to consider other properties and services it could let go of. Effort should be put into making what is available affordable. My goal is for you to figure out a way to not cost me as a taxpayer more money. Astoria Parks and Rec must determine what it can really do with the limited budget and staff. So that's what we've heard. And now we're starting to, again, develop this draft of the master plan. So this slide is showing how the draft is organized. We have an introduction, and that describes why we're planning, how the plan was created, and who was involved in the process. Community profile, which includes an image of who lives in Astoria today, who will live in Astoria tomorrow, and how does that affect decision-making for the Parks and Recreation Department. The inventory and existing conditions, looking at what amenities and services are currently being provided, what does it take to provide them. The level of service analysis, which is looking at how well do the existing amenities and services serve Astorians. The needs assessment, which looks at what did we hear from the community, what is happening in peer communities, what is happening in the state of Oregon, and what is happening nationwide in Parks and Recreation. And that first set of five items leads us to the recommendations. So all of that information distilled down, and that gives you an idea of how can the Parks and Recreation Department ensure it continues to meet the community's needs and provide quality services over the next 10 to 15 years. And what are the action items? How are they prioritized? How much will they cost or save? And then an implementation and funding strategy. When should projects be completed and how can they be funded? And finally, appendices providing a wealth of supplementary information to that. So our next steps are to collect more public input on the draft recommendations. So we will have these same sort of themes that I've presented to you today, and we will have the community able to read those, to go through those, to say, I agree with that, I disagree with that, that should be a high priority, that should not be a high priority. So that moving forward, we have a set of recommendations, again, that we think the community can get behind. So I gave you those dates, Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday. And moving into the approval process and adoption process, we'll be meeting with the Citizen Advisory Committee at least three more times, the Parks Advisory Board as well. On April 26th, we'll have a work session with Planning Commission. On May 16th, we will have a work session with this group. Are there any questions? Yes.
Ian, thank you. I do just have one question, which is, what is the income disparity that you found between users and basic Astorians?
I don't know the number off the top of my head for the survey respondents. I could tell you the number for the median income in Astoria.
Well,
Angela's flipping
Angela's
through to look for the
page
up. For me.
I just thank you. I think I continue to be impressed with this work. It's thorough. It's well detailed, well organized. You have made every effort to give an opportunity for the community to be involved. It's just very impressive. It's on schedule. I really look forward to the recommendations and implementation recommendations as well.
And Mayor Lemire, if I might also add, on the 16th of May, we're gonna call that a tentative date right now. We have quite a hefty meeting going on. That's also the date that's anticipated that we're gonna be looking at discussing the findings of the library study.
Oh,
and so we're gonna need to have some conversations with Mayor Lemire as to whether or not we have some other, maybe, special meetings, because there's going to be quite a bit going through the pike in the month of May.
Councilor Price, to answer your question, we had 70% of survey respondents with a household income of over $50,000, and the median for Astoria is $45,000.
Well, I'd like to just, thank the mayor for your appointments of the citizen advisory group. It's, I'm happy to be on that group, but it's such a wide range of perspectives. There's a mother there who has a baby who she brings to every single meeting. There's the superintendent of the Lewis and Clark National Historical Park. There's Patrick Wingard from the Department of Land Conservation and Development, Ed Overbay, who was on the Parks Board for many, many years. It's just a wonderful group. And the process is exemplary. I mean, I think that Angela and Ian have really set the bar high for planning processes in Astoria. And we can't always get the level of expertise that you're providing with planning, Ian, while also getting somebody who is ingrained in the community. And I think that really makes a big difference that you're here getting to experience these parks amenities for yourself. And so I think we're going to have a better parks and rec system because of this process.
Thank you.
I do have a question. I do want to, again, compliment you, Ian and Angela, on this. The city has already benefited in the point of sale proposal that was going to be just for the rec center, but we've extended it to the maintenance department, so we're already reaping some of the benefits of this master plan. I'm concerned about duplicating services. Have we been in touch with the college about the future of Patriot Hall when we're talking about adding racquetball and rock? Here she comes kind of thing, because I'm not sure, because that was a bond measure, how much Astorians will be able to use that facility and how much there's going to be a kind of crossover.
So Angela Cosby, 1997 Marine Drive. We have been in touch with the college, and even prior to them going out for the bond, there's been many discussions taking place if there will be something potential as joint passes or not duplicating services. They were even talking about it when they were purchasing some of their fitness equipment. So we hope to not do that whatsoever, as it's not going to do any of us much good.
Great. Thanks for tracking that. I appreciate it.
And if I may add, one of the recommendations, I believe, is to not duplicate services with other public or private entities. And Patrick Wingard is also on the college board, and he serves on the citizen committee.
I have some flyers here for the open houses I'd like to pass out.
Great. And while you're doing that, I just want to reiterate what everyone has said up here. You've done a magnificent job, I think. It's great to see all this planning going into it, and we have a good Astoria Parks and Recreation Department now, but I think this will make us a great one. So thank you very much for all you've done. I think they both deserve a big hand.
Thank you, Mayor.
Just maybe larger print for us older people.
Okay, we're next going into the Waterfront Bridges project, and we'll hear a project update and funding discussion.
Our project engineer, Cindy Moore, who is leading this project for the city, will be giving this presentation. I would note that this work session item correlates to a regular agenda item as well. We're going to be going over some of the issues, and if there are questions, I'd like to be able to have that dialogue and discussion now and be able to help set up and formulate a motion to move forward at the regular agenda item portion of the meeting.
Am I not doing this right? Cindy Moore, City Support Engineer. We're here today to talk about the Waterfront Bridges project. Last week we had a public meeting and some of you were able to attend. Thank you. We will not be talking about any of those topics tonight. Tonight is focused on project budget, cost estimates, and our funding moving forward and getting direction from the council. We'll hit on four main topics: a current funding update, rail loads as it pertains to our project costs, a financial discussion also related to rails, that rail topic, and then what I'm calling the 11th Street extension, and I'll go into that a little more in the presentation. I'd like to touch on each of those topics and then ask for questions because we can break it out and hopefully get things clarified as we go here. What I'm showing here is what we've reported to council in the past, and what our award letters from ODOT showed us was a total funding package of about $8.4 million with about $7.5 million in grant from ODOT in their bridge program. What we've discovered is what was actually programmed in there and published in their STIP, which is their financial mechanism for awarding these funds, was a project at $9.5 million, where we would then increase our grant amount by $1 million to 8.5, and then our match would be increased a little over $100,000. And I don't have an explanation because I've asked and ODOT has not been able to give us a great explanation for why that's happened, but this is the facts. This is what they have programmed for our project, is the $9.5 million, and that'll be our baseline moving forward in this conversation as we are talking about cost estimates and looking at the project funding. Anybody have any questions about that? So the next step, we've been working through the project. We're about 15% design completion. And there's been a lot of preliminary work, research, geotechnical work, survey, we're starting to get the framework of what this project's really going to look like. So we're at a point where we feel we need to go to ODOT for a project change request, which means an increase in our funding. It's a little bit awkward because this project is, we're only under an intergovernmental agreement with them for the engineering services part of this project. We aren't under a formal agreement with them on the construction cost, but it's, as you saw, it's programmed in their funding mechanism. So what we're asking for is, or what we'll be talking about, is increasing the allocation that's in their STIP. So it's a little bit awkward, but we feel like this is the timing. This is the best time to go to them and make sure everybody's on the same page moving forward with these critical elements on the project. So one of the things that they found during their geotechnical explorations was deeper bedrock than what was assumed. So that equals deeper piles and more money to the project. Also, in looking at these structures, our design team is recommending a seismic design that's more stout than a typical bridge. Bridges out in the county, not near anything, they're allowed to move a little bit in an earthquake. These ones are all adjacent to different structures, facilities, and we want them to stay put and not damage their adjacent facilities, and that increases the cost. And there's an increase to the project area, and I have what I hope to be not too confusing of an image here to show what I mean. What this image is showing is 10th Street, and the white dotted line is what was an assumed area for the project when it was first scoped, because they didn't really know. They knew generally to stay within the right-of-way, and we wanted to go to the other side of the trestle. But they didn't know the rest of the details. And what we're finding is that this area, I don't know if brown or orange, I don't know what color that looks like to you, but outside of that white area, just for this example, that's where they need to tie in, where it makes the most sense engineering-wise. They need to tie into these existing structures. So it goes outside of that existing, or that prospectus area, the scoped area. So that's an increase to the project area, which again, equals more money. And then the rail. And I'm gonna talk about the rail in a little bit of depth here, hopefully not too much though. Another picture for you. What I mean by rail is the trolley tracks. This again is 10th Street, so there's a bridge structure when the road leaves. Solid ground here goes over the water. That's a bridge structure. And then there's this trestle, here's the trestle. There's this area over here that's the rail, and I'm going to refer to that part as the rail. And we'll be talking about the standard associated with that. So just to give you a little bit of background, the existing structures were originally built for freight loads. They used to have freight trains come through here. And the new bridge and rail that we build that we design and build is for a useful life of 75 to 100 years. So what we're asking you to think about right now is the next 75 to 100 years and what this will mean. And there's two different design approaches that I want to go into. The current use loads and full freight loads. What we would have, what we presumed this project would do would be to replace it to full freight loads. What ODOT is has informed us is that they, and I'll get into more detail on this, but there's a unique or a specific criteria that we could develop for our current uses. So let's talk about our current uses. The custom design standards that ODOT is recommending is using AASHTO, and that's getting a little more technical than you probably want to know, but AASHTO is typically used for design for highway and highway loads. So we use our tracks right now for the trolley, you know, that maintenance equipment. And then there's a potential for a steam locomotive that's being restored by a group that they'd like to use the rail. So we're considering them in our current use. So what we've, as I mentioned, ODOT is looking at this project and saying, okay, this is a project that's funded through a bridge program. We feel it's appropriate to replace these this structure to a bridge standard that can accommodate highway loads. And under those conditions, our funding request for additional funding would be likely, what I'm saying here, is that ODOT initially is saying they would support that. Okay, so they would support a rail that would be designed and constructed to accommodate our current uses. And what freight loads means is, I have a freight train on there. It doesn't necessarily mean a freight train. It means a structure that's designed and constructed to accommodate loads to that level. That could mean a lot of different things between our current uses and a freight train. So our recent Portway Crossing improvements, we were looking to the future, and that was done to a full freight standard. However, under the information we've received so far from ODOT and the bridge group, they do not feel that's an appropriate use of the bridge funds to build our rail to a freight standard when that's not what we're currently using it for. And that what that means to our project, our six bridges, is $1 million. There's a $1 million difference between a rail that can support our current uses and a rail that can support freight or that standard. So some considerations as you're looking at this topic. Again, I just want to stress, we're talking about 100 years. We're looking at 100 years of what could come to Astoria. And that's why I, even though they say this is your current use, I'd like to just make sure that we all know that it's for 100 years. Another consideration is our legal obligations associated with our rail banking agreement with the railroad. And I'd like to have Blair touch on this. He's been in contact with a specialist in this area. And do you have anything to say about this topic? Well, he's getting hooked up here. In your memo, it was stated that it's been determined we are not legally, as a city, obligated to put a structure in that accommodates freight loads as long as we're not putting something in the way of them coming back. So, Blair.
Yeah, there were actually, a couple different issues that were concerned with the rail versus street load problem. One was our agreement with the railroad itself, and whether or not that rail banking agreement required us to do it. The other one is the Surface Transportation Board, the federal agency, whether or not they would consider a construction that didn't meet rail standards to be an impediment, something that would block the railroad. And their concern is that once the rail line is severed, and that's kind of a legal term, that the easement itself would disappear. If the easement disappears, then the adjacent property owners then own the easement, and the city loses its rights under the rail banking agreement. And so the Surface Transportation Board is fairly protective about structures that could be considered to be to sever the easement itself. And so I conferred with an attorney in Seattle who specializes in this area, and after, well, numerous different emails back and forth, he came to the conclusion that we weren't required to improve it to a rail standard. If we wanted to, we could, in fact, take all the rail out, and that wouldn't be a severance of the easement as long as we're using the right-of-way area for trail purposes. The problem that was having in communication was the term bridges. He was visualizing a structure that was blocking the track itself, which is the common term of a bridge. I mean, the idea that it's all the same level is a little unusual. Once he got that idea communicated to him adequately, he was under the impression that what our plan is would work fine. But I think the concern, I think one of the concerns I think for staff was that if we don't build it to a rail standard, that it could be an impediment to future rail traffic making a decision to come back or not, and these bridges would have to be removed in the event that they had to be improved up to a rail standard. But that, one way or the other, that wouldn't impair either the requirements under the Surface Transportation Board or under a rail banking agreement. So the current design is legally sufficient.
Does anybody have any questions? Okay. And that brings up a good point moving forward, is that we've had our design team looking at this with this debate going back and forth, and how we might be able to build a structure that could be modified in the future to accommodate a heavier load. And they believe at this 15% level that they can do that for a cost that would be absorbed in the project and supported by ODOT. So it isn't that we are putting a building in the way of anything coming back, but it is a consideration moving forward that there would be ways to approach the design and construction so that it could be modified. Another item to consider as we're having this conversation is if we wanted to ask ODOT to support full freight rail and took it to a different level, escalating it possibly, that our project schedule is now starting to be affected by this, I won't call it a delay, but this, so far we've been having this conversation, but it could be a delay if we ended up not being able to make those requests right away if we needed to take a different route. And then the funding and cost, which we will talk about right now. So I have this spreadsheet's going to fill in gradually as I explain the different components. But you saw this ODOT published STIP. You saw those numbers at the beginning of the meeting. These are what we have awarded, and they're allocated, I'll call that, in this their STIP. And what I've added to this is an item that I've highlighted, and this is our strategy for paying for this project, which is using our STP funds, which we receive about $100,000 a year from our STP funds, and we would pay back a loan. We're assuming, for the purposes of this discussion, a 25-year loan at 4% interest. It's a fairly conservative assumption because we're seeing interest rates go down. 3% is more common right now. But we want to be conservative. So with what we have now, we'd have a payment of $54,000 a year. So our cost estimate, right, with all the components I've talked about, the seismic, the increased project area, and a rail that would accommodate current uses, this is what you're looking at here, the cost estimate. So it does go up about $2 million total and increases our match to where our payment would be closer to $66,000 a year. If we decided we wanted to try to get ODOT to support a freight load, we're looking at a scenario here where it goes up another $1 million, $1.1 million, and our annual payment goes to $74,000, creeping ever so close to our $100,000 a year that we get from that program. And then this last one is just demonstrating that we really, under the current funding strategy, can't afford to pay for a full freight rail by ourselves, that extra $1 million. If we had to pay for that through city funds using the STP program, it would be over our $100,000 allotment. So what staff is recommending, based on the memo that you got, was asking ODOT formally and officially to increase our STP funds for the current rail loading scenario, including the seismic and the increased project area and deeper bedrock. What I have also highlighted next to it is that we did receive some advice
even after I wrote this memo, from an ODOT representative who said, if you want to ask for the full freight rail from ODOT, ask for both. Ask for two different scenarios. Say, this is what we need to have a viable project in the yellow. The green is really, we really feel this is appropriate. This is using current standards. We don't want to limit ourselves. And we'd like you to support this, but if you feel the funding, you know, give them the option. And so we're now would like to modify our recommendation to say to ask for both scenarios. If under that condition, the council would be willing to pay about $110,000 more in city match, which would increase our payment to the $74,000 a year. This is the time for questions on this large topic. Yes.
I was just wondering, and you probably don't know, but you could give me an idea, how many areas between here and Wana would not support rail traffic to the level that we're talking about building this?
Most of it. There would need to be a lot of work done between here and there. Where this is a little bit different is that we're going to be using modern materials, steel piles with a concrete deck. Uh-huh. A lot of the trestle going east, going that way, is wooden, and that can be retrofitted and modified a little bit easier than set in stone, really, and set in concrete deck and the piles. So that's where it's a little bit more of a consideration than what they would need to do to enhance that other area.
But wouldn't it be like $100 million or more to bring the rails from Wana or Westport or Klatskanine to here up to a standard that could accommodate freight?
I would have no idea how much it would cost, but it would certainly be an undertaking. Yeah.
Okay.
You mentioned that there are other potential uses besides freight that could need a higher standard than for current uses. Can you explain that a little bit more?
What I mean by that is we're looking at 100 years in the future. I don't know what it is. I don't have anybody that's come to me, or else I would say they're a current use. I don't know that the city is aware of any other users. But there's, if you think of 100 years ago and where we've come, it's hard to imagine what might want to use our facilities that might be between those two weights. So I don't have any specific, unless you want me to, I can use my imagination. I don't have any, there isn't anything specific that I was referring to.
Councilor Herzig.
Thank you. A couple questions. Thanks, Cindy. Very good presentation. Would a passenger train be considered a freight, or would that be somewhere between our current usage and a freight usage?
It would be between right, the current uses and your freight.
So that would be a possibility. Right. Someday, who knows, 100 years, a lot of time out there, used to be something that I've heard about kind of thing, and mm-hmm. I think that would be a real boon to our economy to be able to run a passenger train from inland out to the coast kind of thing. And then a couple questions here. Of the $100,000 we're currently receiving from STP, how much are we currently spending per year?
We have, in my time here, I've been here 9 years. We have used our STP funds as a match for our bridges, for the Franklin Bridge and the Irving Bridge. And we've used all of it in that 9 years to match those.
So, but we don't tap into it yearly to do common maintenance or that sort of thing. So right. If we were hitting it for a 66 or 74, that would be its prime usage during those years. Is that
correct?
Great. Thank you. And then finally, about the deep bedrock, I wasn't sure why that was an impediment. Does that mean you're having to go farther down to find the bedrock?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Yes.
All right, thanks. Great presentation. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Cindy. Just to kind of segue from what Councilor Herzig was saying, when you were talking about using the STP funds and you have used them for the matches for Franklin and Irving,
Are there other projects in the future at Public Works that you said, well, we wouldn't be able to use it for this, that maybe you had been thinking that you would use your STP funds for?
I would say no, and can chime in, but as I understand it, it was we were planning to use it for bridge match, and we've been working on this project for a really long time, so it's been that has been our goal, is to use that funding.
Okay.
You will see the 202 sidewalk project. We'll be using this funds. We have a gap between the money that we've used for the Irving Bridge match. We'll accumulate some money that can be used for the sidewalk project before we start paying for this project. So we'll squeeze one in there.
Okay, good. I have a couple of other questions, please. You said that you could approach the design so that it could be modified. What would that mean? Is that additional cost? Is it time? Is it wood versus concrete? How would you do that?
Right now, we're early enough in the design that we could give our design team the goal of designing the details of this project so it could be upgraded. And what they're looking at is it will require more piles to be driven. So making sure that there's nothing in the way of where they think the piles would need to go, utilities or whatever else might be in the way. And allowing for that space, and then looking at the deck, and how much more does it take to really be able to accommodate? Maybe that can just be absorbed by the project. So looking at the different components. Right now they're saying the design and construction, it would be a nominal cost that we could present to ODOT and say, it would be covered under these estimates, but we could present to ODOT and say, okay, if we're going to go this route, we want our project team to look at a structure that can be upgraded.
Why is that not the best option then?
It is a great option.
Yeah. Okay. You mentioned that we know that the trestles and bridges east of us are all wood, and that there will be a lot of concrete or some concrete involved in replacing the wood planking that's there now.
Mm-hmm.
Do we need to do a lot of that replacing of the wood planking? Is that something that the city wants, and second of all, the business owners that are down there around the waterfront want?
I'm not sure. There's a character issue.
Is
having the concrete?
Having the concrete replace the wood planking that's down there now.
Aesthetically, is what you're
aesthetically,
mean.
Yeah.
We're looking at ways of minimizing the difference between the looks. You can have stamped concrete. But what we're moving forward, that is the most modern material. That's going to be a lowest maintenance, and it's going to last you the longest. So I would say that we don't plan on putting back wood.
Well, that's kind of a shame, really. I mean, I did speak to a number of business owners at the public meeting that you had, and at least the ones I talked to are very happy to see those wood planks go, because they do like them, and they know that the tourists like them, and residents like them, and it is the original character of the rail bed there, but it's very hard to maintain and dangerous as well. Let's see, just one other question. Have you talked with the port about, I mean, the port's plans change regularly, but at least currently it doesn't seem that freight trains are in their future, and they're certainly not in Astoria's future. And as for passenger rail, although our old depot is now part of the Maritime Museum, it is always, passenger rail has pretty much always stopped a little east of where we're talking, so I don't see that as an issue, but yeah.
So if you don't mind, the answer is yes, we have called the port, and Cindy and I have spoken to Jim Knight, the director of the port, and we contacted him in advance of this meeting, knowing that this question very well would be coming up. And what Mr. Knight stated is that The port's focus has, with regards to freight rail, has been looking at East Astoria around Tongue Point. That's been, if they were looking at reestablishing rail to Astoria, that has been their focus. He said that, you know, as himself, as the port director, that he wouldn't see freight rail returning to Piers 1, 2, and 3. And a lot of it is because having a dead-end spur going to Pier 1, 2, and 3 without a siding to be able to turn freight trains, get them off while another one loads, mm-hmm. It's really not so feasible. And he said they really just don't have a lot of room down at Piers 1, 2, and 3 to build a siding.
Yeah, that's what I expected to hear. Thank you. And just my last question is for Mr. Henningsgaard. The easements issue is interesting, made my eyebrows go up. Are you, the attorney that you spoke with in Seattle, you have a high confidence level in the advice that he gave you, and did he have precedence for this, and do we have a good relationship with whomever we have a relationship with on the, what do you call it, rails to trails?
Rail
banking, yes.
Well, the difficulty answering your question is that there's over 100, I think it's probably approaching 200 rail-to-trail projects in the United States. And of those, only two have ever reverted back to rail. So there's not a lot of precedent to find out exactly how those agreements are going to be interpreted or what the Surface Transportation Board is going to do. All of the examples that exist now have been actual blockages, situations where a structure was built or proposed to be built over the rail bed itself. And so actually reading the agreement, I'm confident that this project itself would not be a violation of the Rails to Trails Agreement. And the Seattle attorney was pretty confident that the Surface Transportation Board wouldn't object to this kind of improvement. I mean, the fact of the matter is right now, I don't think these bridges are sufficient to sustain rail traffic. And so replacing them with something less really isn't a violation of the easement in any way.
Do you have to go to the board for permission of any sort?
No, we don't. But as a federal agency, the way it was explained to me, and I don't have any experience at all with the Surface Transportation Board, the way it's explained to me is that because they're a federal agency, they have the ability to interject themselves when they think it's appropriate to protect the national rail system.
So also Mr. Montaigne, who was the attorney that we've used, has been the rail banking attorney that the city of Astoria has used for a number of years. Whenever we've had circumstances where, for instance, we have, the city has approved leases with different entities, particularly breweries, to place grain tanks within the rail right of way, and Mr. Montaigne was the individual that we used to develop those leases with right. Bowie as well as Astoria Brewing Company.
Okay, thank you very much for the clarification.
I have a couple more questions.
Sorry. That gave me some more questions. Thanks, Cindy. So yeah, the planking has got lots of old world charm, but I've known a number of cyclists who have fallen on that because it gets so slippery, so I think it'll be actually good to have it replaced. Any chance of it being salvaged, some of that lumber? I don't know how toxic it's going to be after all the exposure to the trolley and whatnot, but I know a lot of people love salvaged lumber of that sort of thing, so I think just something to throw out for something else for you to think about. The pile driving, that has to be seasonal, doesn't it, to avoid disturbing marine life and that kind of thing. So that's a winter operation, isn't it?
Yes, that's correct. And I meant to mention at the beginning of this presentation that we will come back in May, and hopefully in May, it sounds like it's a busy month for you guys, to give you an indication of what feedback we got at our public meeting and how the project's starting to look as far as some of the aesthetic and scheduling.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else before I chime in? Okay. It's pretty difficult to predict what's going to happen in 75 to 100 years. And I really like the option of asking ODOT to look at both and let us know what they would fund. It seems to me that if they're willing to fund that heavier weight load, that it may be worth our while to do that. We don't know what's going to come in the future, and as Councillor Herzig said, it would be nice to get passenger trains back in here. I would support that.
So I did have a couple more slides to talk about. One other small piece I promised to get through in 5 minutes. The 11th Street, what I call the 11th Street Extension, so it's somewhat separate. Well, it is separate from the rest of the topic. But this is 11th Street. You've seen this white line before. This is what our scoped project limits were. And you're seeing how they're going to have to go a little bit outside that. Our 11th Street Extension is this area east, this yellow. This will connect us to solid ground. And this area is in as bad a shape as the rest of it. But this is a trestle area outside of the project limits, really. And so I just want to say a couple things about that. So we believe it to be, it's likely load limited, which means that a highway load cannot drive on that as it cannot drive on our bridges currently. Full replacement of that to a level that's consistent with our project is estimated at $840,000 by our design team. And ODOT's given us some preliminary feedback that they would not support adding that to the project. It would be similar to the trestles between each of the bridges. That's how they would look at it. So if that being the case, we kind of end up in that same situation that we were with the $1 million for the rail. We really can't afford to build it to that level. And we would look at the possibility of retrofitting this structure to some other techniques using the existing structure that's there. And that would be an approach that our design team would look at. But we would really like to ask ODOT to include that. They haven't officially said no, so we'd like to ask and make a good case for why that needs to be included, because the bridge cannot function the way that it is going to be designed and constructed to if it has that limiting piece because of the traffic that goes to the east. And it's unique to that 11th Street, whereas some of the other numbered streets are just going straight across. So that we want to make sure we have council's support moving forward with that request. If they deny the request, then our team will look at developing a different strategy so we can use the new 11th Street bridge structure to its fullest capacity. That's my last slide. Are there any questions about that component?
No, but we don't have to worry then if we go from this part to that part that we're going to drop through if it's not to the same standards as the bridge ends.
No, it would be retrofitted to under the scenario where we get denied by ODOT and we have to come up with a different approach. It would be brought to the current standard. It just wouldn't be completely replaced like we're doing with the new bridges.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much for the presentation.
And again, this isn't going to be a regular agenda item where we're going to be asking City Council to make a motion to provide direction to staff how to move forward on these items as a part of the regular agenda.
Okay, we will adjourn our work session, and does anyone need
a quick break if you would allow that?
All right.